Our first reading is in the Old Testament, 1 Kings, chapter 19, beginning at the beginning of the chapter to verse 18. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Eli to say, "May the gods deal with me ever so severely if by this time tomorrow I will not make your life like them." So Elijah was afraid, and he ran for his life. He came to Beersheba in Judah, and he left his servant there, and he himself went on a day's journey into the desert. He came then to a broom tree. He sat down under it and prayed that he might die. "I have had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under the tree and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there was by his head a cake of bread, baked over hot coals, and a jar of water. He ate and drank, and he lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There, he went into a cave and he spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him and said, "What are you doing, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, broken down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and a powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. And a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, broken down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too." The Lord said to him, "Go back the way you came. Go to the desert of Damascus, and when you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat from Abel-Meholah, to succeed you as prophet. Delay will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any of who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal, and all whose mouths have not kissed him." And from the Gospel of John, chapter 12, verses 27 through 33. These are the words of Jesus. "Now my heart is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven and said, "I have glorified it and will glorify it again." The crowd that was there and heard it said it had thundered. Others said that an angel had spoken to him. Jesus said, "This voice was for your benefit, not for mine. Now is the time for judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out. But I, when I am lifted up from this earth, will draw all men to myself." He said this to show what kind of death he was going to die. May God add a blessing upon these words for our hearts and minds. May we learn from them. May we hear God's voice in them. The Sound of Silence was not a hit when it was first released in 1964. In fact, it was a flop. It ended up breaking up the group. Garfunkel went back to college. Simon went to Europe to sing and play. It wasn't until almost a year later when the producers had remastered it did it become a number one hit. And of course, then they got back together. And after a few years, the song became identified with the Vietnam War, although that was not its original intention. It was a product of its culture, the song, and a product of what was going on in our culture, the war. 63,000 American lives plus were lost on a foreign soil, fighting a war that many saw as making little sense. Their voices, 63,000 silenced. They're now names that are reflected on a wall. The sound can be heard if you're there. Silent, but it's there. It speaks volumes, doesn't it? People who have passed, died in war, died, others who died as victims, those who have died that we honor as saints. On the 10th anniversary of 9/11, Paul Simon, who is a native New Yorker, used this song, the Song of Silence, as his tribute to the victims of that terrorist attack. Its meaning was clear to me, and I had goosebumps. The dead do have voices. They do. Do we hear them? Do we hear them today? Or are their voices crowded out by shouting of our own voices, of we who are living? Voices that often put words into those who have passed, into the saints' mouths. We do that. We pretend to know what they care about and what they were about, but do we really let them speak? Do we let their stories be a testimony? If we don't let them speak, if we don't pause, we do them a disservice, and we do not honor their legacy. We seek to supplant our own agendas for the lessons that they would otherwise teach us. So let's listen today. Listen. Maybe it's a still, soft voice. Silence does indeed speak louder than words, doesn't it? Maybe even more often it does. Elijah fled Israel when he felt threatened. All of his friends, all of the prophets had been put to death by King Ahab and Jezebel, the queen. He was feeling depressed, burnt out, so much so that he even wanted to die, he says. God, just take me now. It's interesting because Elijah has a reputation of being some sort of super prophet. We are in the age of superhero movies. Elijah was like the super prophet, right? He raised a child from the dead. He called down fire from heaven on Mount Carmel. He was so good at being a prophet that God took him before he died, took him up in a chariot right before Elisha's eyes, took him straight away to heaven without having to suffer pain and death. And here he is whining and complaining, this super prophet. This is his most famous story, though. Him whining and complaining to God in the cave. Maybe our super saints have more to teach us in their struggles and pains than they do in their triumphs. Something to think about. When we think of saints in nowadays and age, there's one name that comes to mind, and that's Mother Teresa. She's the paragon of a modern-day saint. When we think of somebody who would deserve the term, right? She was somebody of privilege who felt the call to serve the poorest of the poor in the world, which at that time, and even today, is probably Calcutta, India. She established a ministry that millions looked up to. People admired her. People were inspired by her. A whole order was established in her name. They sought to venerate her earlier than it was possible to do so. Many of those same people were shocked to discover that her personal writings, published after her death, expressed a lot of doubt in her life, a lot of burnout. Yet for me, it was reassuring that even the most apparently pious and even the most righteous among us who do so much good, we're also very human. It's a lesson that our saints would have us learn today. But what else would they tell us? What lessons are they trying to share that's getting crowded out and lost in today's culture and society of shout and be heard? Imperfect people throughout the Bible, the great King David was no stranger to corruption. The wise Solomon, was prone to outside influences. St. Peter denied Jesus. St. Thomas doubted him. Saints James and John once demanded that they be first in line. St. Paul was once the church's greatest enemy, and now we can't throw a stone in the state of Ohio without hitting a church named St. Paul. The list goes on and on. They rose above it all to be counted with the saints of God because they chose the way of grace. They made a decision in life to choose the way of grace offered to them by God. To take the hand of forgiveness of God, become a saint. We can too. To choose that way. To choose God's way. So let's listen to these names. And after each name, we'll have a moment of silence for every one of them. And during that time, we're going to let their whole life story stand as a legacy to the gospel. Their love of family and friends, their dedication to their communities. They heard and responded to that. Let's hear it as they did. Let's be drawn in by that still, small whisper of a voice. That's God's voice calling us. That's God's voice that's persistent, always there, no matter the chaotic noise of life. God's not in the firestorms, people. God's not in hurricanes and in earthquakes, as some people would have you believe. God is in the stillness. Let us celebrate our saints.